It has no relationship at all as to what kind of a year it would be for you individually, or for me, or for anyone in this world. Of course, we start by saying a Happy New Year as a wish, realizing that saying it, conveying the idea, has no power to make it so. Regardless of how many good wishes we may have for the year, our good wishes are absolutely without power to cause happiness or peace or harmony or prosperity in the new year. And that is why we always start the year with predictions. Our 1st of January newspapers are always full of predictions for the coming new year. That is, trying to foresee what will happen. And all of this in the recognition that we have no power, the world has no power, to make it happen. It can look at figures, statistics, and try to imagine what will happen. And of course, each one has an entirely different way of evaluating figures. Therefore, each comes to a different conclusion. But as to having any effect upon the year, these prophecies have none. You'd be surprised how interesting it would be if you could get out the January 1st editions of 1960 newspapers and read the predictions for this year, very few of which have come to pass. And then you will know that neither the predictions nor the wishes have power to bring about anything in our experience. But far from making that a hopeless picture, it really is the foundation for a very encouraging one, because once we realize that our wishing ourselves or each other a Happy New Year won't make it so, and once we realize that these predictions of the coming year have no influence upon the year, we can then begin to investigate and ask, what is there then that can bring to us some measure of assurance of what the new year will be, or what is there that can be done, accomplished within ourselves, that will have an effect upon the new year? Now, every one of us as individuals not only have tremendous influence and power upon our own lives, and it isn't only that we have some measure of power, dominion, upon the lives of those who are near and dear to us, but far more than this, we have power on the effects that influence the entire world. Very often, one individual can change the nature of history. One individual has within himself or herself the power of changing history. In this recent election, you have seen how much of the election really was influenced by a few votes, just a few votes in this city or this community or that community, has influenced an entire state result. And just a very few votes, comparatively speaking, less than half of 1%, influenced an entire national election. And so you can readily understand how powerful one single vote can be, or a dozen votes, or two dozen votes. And very often we think how little power we have in the history of our nation or the world, not realizing how much power there is in an individual. Of course, it isn't necessary to repeat that from the earliest of days, the power that a Moses had in his time, or a Jesus, or a John, or a Buddha, or a Lao Tzu, not only on the history of their days, but the history of all time, influenced just by an individual here or there. So it is that we not only influence our own lives, but no one knows who the individual is who may influence the history of an entire year, or what group may bring about changes in the history of a world. We are going to witness a very interesting experiment during this year along that line. One man has caught a glimpse of something in the financial world, in the system of money, which he believed could change the entire economic history of the world and take it out of its present debt, present depressed state, and make the currency of every nation solid, substantial. For quite a while, and interested others, finally convinced many bankers, many economists, and for 8 years has worked politically until finally he convinced a political party, a major political party, that this system, if in operation, would change the economy of a nation. And with 8 years of work, that party was elected. And now this party is committed to putting in this new system of currency nationwide. And it is possible, if this thing works out as it has been foreseen, predicted, that it can change the nature of a nation's economy from debt to prosperity. And if so, it will change the history of the world. And again, we will witness what one individual can do, not only in his individual experience of accumulating money, but of restoring a balance of harmony to a world. But in every case, all of this begins with ourselves. It begins with understanding how these changes are brought about in our individual experience And then our circle widened until we are able to bring this influence into the experience of others. And so we must start with individual you and individual me. And we must start with this recognition. The year, being a new one, does not have within itself the power to be any different than our last year. In other words, throughout this 1960, as in all previous years, some have been made healthy and some diseased. Some have been made wealthy and some impoverished. The year itself hasn't been equal for all people, not even in one country or one community. What makes the difference? And the answer always must be one word: consciousness. The word consciousness has within itself the secret of life, the secret of harmony or discord. The word consciousness contains the entire secret of individual life and collective life. The reason is that we are states and stages of consciousness in our humanhood. And what our outer experience is determined by what our state of consciousness is. Now, in the earliest years of our experience, we have no control over what our consciousness is. In other words, as we are born, as we are conceived, before we are born, our parents determine our consciousness. They imbue us with their consciousness, and therefore we are born, some of us, full of hope, confidence, assurance, peace, joy. Others are born full of fear, doubt, anxiety. And in the earliest years of our experience, our parents dominate our lives. And we really are the showing forth of their state of consciousness. I have actually witnessed this, that there are some children who are born really beautiful, and in their earliest years are beautiful. The very reflections of perhaps their mother or father consciousness. Later in life, when they are out under their own consciousness and are no longer governed by their parents' consciousness, they lose this beauty. They lose whatever it was of charm that they had in their childhood if their own state of consciousness has not evolved the same as the parents'. And on the other hand, there have been ugly ducklings while under their parents' dominion who have blossomed out into beauties once the influence of their parents was thrown off and they could function on their own inner consciousness. In the same way, there are those who in their childhood have poverty complexes foisted upon them by their parents and their surroundings. And once they are away from that influence, they're able to blossom under their own state of consciousness, and vice versa. Now, while we are not responsible when we are children, once we have come to an age where we begin to make our own decisions and to live our own lives, we are no longer bound by either the limitations of our parents, nor are we blessed by the bounties of our parents. We now have an individual life to live, an individual consciousness to unfold. And here is where our second stage comes in, when our schooling, our education or lack of it, our environment, our friends, all begin to have some influence upon our consciousness, and so we begin to evolve much in the same way that our friends or relatives or schoolmates are evolving. And in the ordinary human life, an individual never, at any time between the cradle and the grave, they never evolve their own consciousness. They never live their own lives. In the ordinary human life, a person is always living in the lives of their relatives, their friends, their community, their surroundings, and they do not surmount these because it is not taught to them that they are an individual consciousness with individual capacities, God-given, with individual propensities, with individual characteristics, all God-governed, and therefore they can throw off the influence of their surroundings. They can throw off the influence of the world about them and begin to live as individuals. Those who are led to a metaphysical or spiritual teaching are given the opportunity of coming out from among them and becoming separate. In other words, with the very first of our metaphysical or spiritual teaching, we have revealed to us the fact that we exist as consciousness, and that God is the original substance, essence, and law of that consciousness. And therefore, we can be the showing forth of infinity, of eternality, of immortality. We can be the showing forth of God's grace, rather than the showing forth of whatever period of physical, mental, moral, or financial era we happen to be in at the moment. In other words, truthfully, we are independent of what is going on in this world. Actually, by the grace of God, we need not be benefited by what is going on in the world of good, nor deprived of good by what is going on in the negative sense of the world, for we can come out from this mass consciousness and begin to live our lives as individuals. It was a wonderful thing to read here last month that within this last 12-month period, one of the greatest changes has taken place in the United States consciousness of any time in recent history. In other words, when, beginning with the Depression in 1930, this country began to take on the complexion of the older foreign countries of mass consciousness, dependence on government support, dependence on collective activity. In other words, when we began to come under the socialistic and communistic influence of giving up our personal and individual selves to become a part of a collective, nationally supported society, we were on the downward path that led eventually to probably the lowest ebb 2 years ago, when a survey of college graduates was taken in this country asking the ambition and hopes of the graduates. And in that year, more than 70% of the graduates said their hope was to get on the payroll of a corporation and be able to retire in 30 years. That was the hope and ambition of our college graduate youth 2 years ago. In this 2 year period, this has so completely changed that the surveys taken in the last few months indicate that the youth of this nation is clamoring for individual expression, individual unfoldment, individual living, individual opportunities. And all of this really has come in the last 12 or 15 months. This recognition of what we had lost in those years of socialism, what we had lost in those years of collectivism, which led really to a communistic state of thought being embodied among us. Of course, it couldn't last in the soil of this nation, and it is a wonderful thing to see how now that tide is turning. But this leads us in the spiritual world to a different step, because we go a step further than human individuality and a desire for human differences. We go to that state of individuality which is a God-given individuality, which makes us so different from each other that each one of us has an individual mode of life, an individual art or talent or ability. Each one of us has an individual capacity for a free, joyous life under the government of the spiritual creative principle of life, that which we call God. So it is then that when we come to the subject of a new year, we cannot look out upon this year as having any hopes for us. Our hope must be in what change of consciousness will take place in us that will make this year a better one than the last, a richer one, a deeper one, more harmonious one, a more healthful one. What is there within us that can change the year or make it a happy year? Do not think for a moment that the answer to this isn't known. The answer is known and has been demonstrated for many, many years by many. The answer to what kind of a year we have is that the year will be in accord with the state of consciousness with which we face the year. And the next question, how do we determine what that state of consciousness is to be, which determines the year? And this is the answer. A consciousness imbued with truth manifests as harmonious outpicturing of life. The outer form of our life is determined by the degree of truth embodied in our consciousness, or the amount of truth of which our consciousness is constituted. In the absolute, God constitutes our consciousness, therefore we already have the full and complete, perfect spiritual consciousness. But this is only of demonstrable availability in proportion to our conscious awareness of the truth. And let me show you how that is. When our lives are lived by getting up in the morning and performing our tasks throughout the day with little or no conscious realization of a spiritual presence and power within us, then we are subject to the mass human consciousness. And if it happens to be a year of universal prosperity, we will probably share in some of it. If it happens to be a year of collective good health, we probably will share in it. If it happens to be a year of economic depression, we will share in it. If it happens to be a year of epidemics, we will share in it. The only way to avoid being a part of the mass mind and of demonstrating the life that is lived by humans is to begin our day and end our day and continue throughout the day, praying without ceasing, praying in the form of recognizing that I am not living my own life and no one else is living it for me. God is living my life. God in the midst of me is mighty. There is a divine presence within me that goes before me to make the crooked places straight. There is a spiritual presence and power within me that is the law of resurrection unto my entire experience, unto my business or my body or my art or my health. There is a spiritual influence, a spiritual presence within me that is a law of resurrection that even restores the lost years of the locust. the continued recognition of the presence and power of God within our very own being is that which separates us from the masses and makes us live a God-governed life. A life lived by the laws of God, the substance of God, the activity of God, the presence of God, and the power of God. But only this acknowledging Him in all thy ways, only this keeping the mind stayed on Him, only this separates us from the mass influence, from collective experience, and enables us to be a law unto ourselves. We become a law unto ourselves in that moment in which we consciously accept a God in the midst of us. In that moment in which we consciously accept that the Son of God dwells in us, and that therefore we are children of God, and if children of God, heirs of God, joint heirs to all the heavenly riches, only by our conscious acceptance of this truth do we bring ourselves under God's law. Remember, as a human being, as a creature, you are not under the law of God, neither indeed can be. As a human being, as a creature, you are under the laws of humanity. You are under the laws of karmic law, cause and effect. Whatever causes are operating in human consciousness produce their effect upon us individually. But we can become separate and apart from it. Be ye perfect, we are told. Be ye perfect. How can you be perfect? A human being can't be. There is no way for a human being to be perfect. There is no way for a human being even to be halfway perfect. The only way we can be perfect is even as your Father in heaven is perfect. Even as you acknowledge the perfection of God in the midst of you and acknowledge God's government, God's reign, God's law in the midst of you, only then can you be perfect with God's perfection. And in this perfection, you find that in a tremendous measure, you are separate and apart from those things that are governing the lives of this world, affecting the lives of this world. Only because we have not attained the fullness of spiritual realization do we fail to demonstrate the fullness of spiritual harmony. But we are not concerned at the moment with fullness. We have to start where Paul did, with forgetting those things which are behind, not claiming immediate perfection for ourselves, but forgetting those things which are behind. Let us at least claim that as of this moment, since I and my Father are one, that oneness governs my life. Since I and my Father are one, the allness of God is the measure of my capacity Oh, of course, no one is demonstrating the fullness of God's capacity at this moment, but can't we rejoice if we can demonstrate that measure of it that enables us to live separate and apart from the sins, the diseases, the lacks, and the limitations that otherwise would be upon us. If we can just demonstrate some measure of our spiritual relationship to God, we will have made a beginning. And of course, we will not accomplish the fullness until we have made the beginning. So therefore, do not let us make the mistake that some have made in the metaphysical world of becoming discouraged because they haven't demonstrated complete harmony or complete freedom or complete this, that, or the other thing. Let us rejoice with every single measure of spiritual harmony that comes into our experience, because it is a proof of what the ultimate can be and will be as we persist in this way. Our lives are not going to be subject to what takes place during this year in the world's history. Our lives are going to be subjected unto God and God's government. But this each one must do individually. Even all of us who are assembled in this room will not be able to prove that, except in proportion to your individual acceptance of it and persistence in it. In other words, there is no way for even the spiritual law or spiritual truth to affect the lives of those who do not consciously accept it, those who do not consciously work with it. We have witnessed with the Master 3 years of having his disciples with him, and then watching how Judas failed to show forth anything really of that 3 years of work on the part of the Master. We witnessed the desertion by Peter, by all of the disciples really, in spite of 3 years of companionship with the Master himself. And so we do know to what extent the individual must embrace truth in order to demonstrate it. Ah, yes. The mere fact of being a part of a spiritual teaching brings to everyone in it some measure of harmony. In other words, the consciousness of the teacher or the consciousness of the practitioner does bring some measure of harmony into the lives of everyone who comes under their influence. But it is a temporary benefit, except in the cases where the individuals carry it on themselves. There again, we may go back to the human experience where children may be brought up in the most wonderful of homes and be the most wonderful of children. But when they get out into the world, if they do not carry that forward themselves, if they do not take the lessons that they learned at home and carry them out into expression, they can very well become the profligates of the next generation. So it is. No parent can absolutely guarantee what their child will be. They can only guarantee what foundation they give them with which to face life. And so it is that a teacher, a practitioner, cannot guarantee what degree of spiritual harmony will be the lot of the student. They can only guarantee the foundation of spiritual awareness that they give the student, and then it is up to the student to work with the principles until their own consciousness has evolved. Now, in the first step of spiritual unfoldment, a step which everyone has to take for themselves and which they can take under guidance if they will, but which in the last analysis they must fulfill themselves, the first step is the conscious recognition and acknowledgement of an inner God government, God substance, God law, that each one must do. Each one must make daily, a daily practice in their lives, the realization of an inner presence greater than any of the problems that we face in daily living. Constantly there must be the reminder that there is that within us which is greater than any situation we have to meet in the outer world. Then, along with this, must come the conscious realization of the principle that finally proves to be the one that gives us our ultimate freedom. Our ultimate freedom from what the Master called this world. When he said, I have overcome this world, he meant that he had reached a place in consciousness where this world had no effect upon him. Its material laws, its mental laws, its health laws, its food laws, its economics, its legal laws, none of these had any effect upon him. He had risen to a state of consciousness where he functioned completely through spiritual law. Now, this state of consciousness is attained first by this recognition of the God presence within, but there is one greater step than this that has to be taken as a second step, and that is the recognition that spirit is the only power. Spirit is the only law. Spirit is the only reality. Now, we are faced from early morning to late at night with the universal belief out here that there are not only spiritual powers, but that there are material powers and mental powers and legal powers. Each one within themselves must eventually come to some measure of recognition of this, that spiritual power alone, spiritual law alone, spiritual life alone is the real and the omnipresent, and that beside spiritual law, life, activity, the material laws or mental laws have no power. This is the basic truth that sets men free from the conditions of this world. The realization of the spiritual life or the spiritual law or spiritual power as being the only real. Once we can begin, even in a small measure, to agree with the Master, what did hinder you? What did hinder you? What power is there apart from God? What power is there other than God? Is sin a power? Is disease a power? Is money a power? Is law a power? Is anything really a power beside God's government of His universe? And as we come gradually to that place where we can say, what did hinder you? Pick up your bed and walk. This that you are acknowledging as power is not power. This that you are acknowledging as limitation is not limitation, or as a power of limitation is not a power of limitation. It acts as such only in accord with our acceptance of two powers, good and evil. As long as we accept two powers, we are subject unto two powers. Therefore, along with that first step of the continuous realization of the fact that there is an inner presence, an inner power which governs the outer life, there must be this second realization. There is but one power, and it is spiritual. There is but one law, and it is spiritual. There is but one activity, and it is spiritual. And all else is without power, without presence, without continuity, without cause, without effect, without a law to sustain it. You see then that the new year becomes what we make it. What we make it by our inner life. True, we still go through all the human motions of performing our business, our functions in life, carrying on our art or our profession, whatever it may be, but governed always by this inner life. You know, it is a remarkable thing that a magazine like Reader's Digest, really the only magazine covering the world, is giving the amount of attention that it is to this subject of the inner life. In, I guess it was October, they published that article on why a scientist believes or has proven that there is God. In December, they have a most wonderful article on the subject of meditation. In January, another article on contemplation. All of these things showing the world the need for a few moments, every once in a while, of inner contemplation, of inner recognition, of something greater than the problems that we're facing in life. And their articles not only show the need for this, but the results in the lives of those who do recognize the fact that an inner calm, an inner peace has power in our outer experience. And you may be assured of this, that such articles are bringing awakening to thousands of people in the world who never before have known the nature of religion, who thought that religion consisted of going to church and mumbling some prayers or listening to a minister preach from a pulpit, not knowing ever that religion was an inner experience and an inner relationship with God that was lived within one, inside or outside of a church, was lived in inner stillness and quietness. It was a marvelous thing in this last one where it was emphasized that with regardless of what problems you had, the solution was to go within and remember, be still. This is the solution to problems. Go within and remember to be still. Of course, this is awakening many in the world who have not had the advantage that those have had who have been led to the spiritual teaching. As I notice these articles, I'm more and more grateful for the 30 years that I have given to teaching and preaching the benefits of meditation and inner contemplation, because I know that this is showing a way to the world and demonstrating and proving what power there is within the individual. Now, strangely enough, in the beginning, you will find that these two steps that I've enumerated this morning, practicing the presence of God, the conscious realization of God, and the changing of our own consciousness from the universal belief in two powers to the acceptance of truth, that there is but one power, you find almost from the start that you can bring a greater sense of peace and harmony into your experience. But ultimately, you are going to learn through this that it is this inner contemplation, this inner peace, that is the power that in one individual can change the history of worlds, of nations, of the entire globe. That it is this very inner power, without going out on the proselyting platform, without going out on the crusade platform, without trying to humanly revolutionize either religion or politics or economics, just by our inner contemplations, the effect upon the world is such that it brings about the uncovering of new ideas, new inventions, new discoveries. Our inner contemplations go out and change the history of this world. It brings to light the hidden mysteries that still must come to light to bring peace on earth. The world likes to believe that it is living in a period of civilization. Civilization has not yet begun on earth. Only the opening stages of civilization have come to light. Civilization cannot be said to be on earth until there is a loving of our neighbor as ourself. Any degree of lack of loving our neighbor as ourself is the degree of our lack of civilization. Because if the word civilization can have any meaning at all, its meaning must be that of the relationship of neighbor or brother or sister among men. And without that relationship, It can hardly be civilization. It can still be only animality. Civilization has to begin with an individual. And it has to be carried to the point that Jesus carried it when he gave the Sermon on the Mount and pointed to the lack of civilization in an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. The lack of civilization in wanting revenge and vengeance on earth. The lack of civilization in that old living under the law. And what he pointed to in his Sermon on the Mount is a condition of civilization. And we will know that civilization only in proportion as we are enabled to live under the Sermon on the Mount. Again, that is an individual experience which becomes collective because, oh, this is so difficult to express. That which you are becomes evident to the entire world that knows you. And that which you are becomes an influence unto all those about you, so that the inner stillness, peace, and quiet, and love that you attain becomes a spiritual influence felt by all around you. The lack of it in you is felt by all around you. And it is for this reason that it behooves us to determine that our lives in the new year will be governed by an inner grace, an inner peace, an inner love of our neighbor, and a greater reliance on this truth that there is but one power, and it is spiritual, and it is closer to me than breathing. It is within me. I carry spiritual power wherever I go, up in the air or down in the sea or around on the earth. In the hospitals where sometimes I must visit, or the prisons, or the homes, or the lecture halls, wherever I am, I carry the spiritual presence and power of God by my conscious recognition and acknowledgement of it, and in no other way. Only by that recognition do I carry the spiritual presence, the spiritual influence with me, so that I may say the place whereon I stand is holy ground. Why? Because of the conscious realization of God's presence. In this way, then, do we consciously keep our consciousness imbued with truth, and in proportion as our consciousness is imbued with truth, are we made free of the world's conditions? In that proportion can we say, I have overcome the world. Thank you, and a brilliant new year. Thank you. Thank you.